Hello and welcome to another episode of An Inspired Life, where we find freedom and meaning by embracing our divine essence. And I have Mihir Thaker on the call today, and I am so excited because this is totally divine essence. And I think the thing that we're going to talk about today is so powerful, because when we're trying to connect to our divine essence, what we want to do is understand our human self more and more, so that we can peel back the layers and figure out what if that is divine, what is our real truth. You know, this might be what we're packaged in this moment, but what's the truth of who we are? And Mihir is from Mihir Thaker Coaching and Consulting. He's a business strategist and an executive coach. And we're going to be talking about systemic change work, which is actually about going back to your childhood and taking a systematic, I think this is what it's going to be about, but he's going to talk to us more, and taking a systematic approach to understanding the influences that you've had in your life and peeling back those layers to see what you've learned from other people and what is helpful and what is not, and how you can continue on being more of your truth and your divine essence. Mihir, did I get it right? Is that what you do? Is that what you're talking about?
Thank you. It's not an easy description to cover, so you did fantastic. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you for joining us on the show. I find you to be such a beautiful soul who it feels so authentic. Like, you just feel like you're living your truth. And I would love for you to share with us your story, because I know you were quite spiritual early on. So can you tell us about how your life started and all of the ups and downs? Well, okay, some of the ups and downs along the way.
Sure. I grew up in India, in Mumbai, right, in a family of 14 people.
Whoa.
And one bedroom apartment. And but, you know, it's one of those things that a lot of people, I'm sure there are so many listeners on your show who can relate to this, that you wake up one day and you feel something feels off, that you are not supposed to be here, or this is not your journey or not your story, but something inside of you kind of keeps reminding you that you have something else to aspire for. So even though I grew up in that challenging environment, with a classroom full of 90 kids every year, you know, and so forget about personalized attention, but something inside of us, and probably that was what we call the heart, the divine spirit, whatever we refer to as higher consciousness, that was always triggering me inside. There's something bigger that to be aspiring for. And to cut a long story short, next thing I know, I'm going through engineering school in India. Someone just showed up and paid for all 4 years of my education, and I'm on a...
Wait, hold on. Someone just showed up and paid for all 4 years of your education. How does that...
Well, somehow access to mentors and teachers has always been a prominent part of my journey. I firmly believe that when you are ready, your teacher shows up. And for me, every next level in my life was through some teacher or mentor who opened the door for me.
Wow.
So there were people who knew of me through our family, and oftentimes there were challenging times in being able to afford high quality education in India. But somehow when they found out that I had been accepted in this engineering school, and if there was a financial challenge in the family, they just showed up and they said, all right, you know what, don't worry about it. We'll pay for it and he can continue his education. So that's how miraculously every step of the way somebody shows up. And then next thing I know, I got a full scholarship to go to US as well, and on the plane to America. So they were like a completely different life from, you know, the chaos and the hustle bustle of India. But there were a few key lessons that I think might be valuable to your listeners. One of the key lessons that I learned while growing up in India in such a happening family of 14 people was that you just learn to make do with whatever is there. I think that was like one of the biggest learnings, that the saying is that it's not resources, but it's resourcefulness. That's what seems to be lacking in people often. So you become very resourceful with what's available, how to navigate your life through all of that. And the second key learning that stood out for me was that each and every one of us has been gifted with the divine ability to listen to our heart, that we have access to our higher self-consciousness. Sometimes that voice can get quite muddied up with everything around us. Mm. But being in that space, being in such a sensory overloaded kind of an environment, the only navigation tool I had was access to my feelings and to be able to hone in, to be able to feel what feels right, what feels right, what feels right. And I think every person has that ability, just that we often ignore it, or sometimes we just tend to, you know, peer pressure or life or conditioning makes us choose otherwise, and then we pay a big price for it. So for me, knowing that at some level that this is probably not the right environment for me, that I'm supposed to be going for something a lot bigger in life. And at the same time, being grateful that, okay, here is where I am. So that was the third lesson. Just sometimes accepting how things are is a big part of our growth process, that we are showing gratitude for what we have rather than, you know, because there were people, even though I was in an environment that was considered middle class by Indian standards, there were so many people who were far below the poverty line there.
I am absolutely fascinated. So I don't usually delve into people's lives like in the before stage of their transformation, but I know that you've then made a lot of money in America, and now you coach some, like you do consulting to some incredible businesses here in Australia. And we can hear a bit more about that, but like to come from a family of, did you say 14?
Yes.
What was that actually like? Like actually a day in your life of having 14 children in the house?
Well, it wasn't 14 children. It was grandparents, uncles, aunts, everybody in the same household. So, but there were still 14 warm bodies in the house. So,
wow.
Yeah.
So do you eat your food really fast? Like in case anyone comes along to steal it from you?
No, it's a very interesting experience, right? Because you somehow learn to become very self-sufficient, and the level of attention that you get is like minuscule.
Mm-hmm.
So you learn to survive and you learn to go through that experience. And somehow, given that it's such a complex environment from a family point of view, you learn to navigate everybody's moods and energies, like who is upset this morning and are you at risk at being, you know, beaten up or something like that. So there was always that element of tuned into your energy. That experience was always there.
That's really interesting, because I know that I'm still embracing and noticing and trying to step out of an old pattern of, with my father, when he was in a bad mood, I would change who I was in that moment and make myself smaller or make myself kinder or change who I was to be able to fit in with his mood. And then I then went to, I worked in a restaurant when I was younger. I was about 16 and everyone got pretty drunk at this restaurant. And so I knew then how to navigate around the drunk men who wanted to hit on like the younger girl and all of that sort of stuff. And it's something that I think a lot of us do, is change who we are based on what is going on around us. Did you learn that as well? Like the people?
Massively. I think that's a big part of the change work aspects that we look at, that I've learned and trialed over many years with so many executives, is that we always, there's a saying, right, in the psychotherapy world, I'm not a psychologist, so I wouldn't be, or a therapist, but there's a saying in that world that we always try to complete our unfinished childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And we try to live our unfinished patterns in many ways. And at a deeper level, from a systemic family systems point of view, we try and do things in an unworkable effort to say I love you to our parents and family of origin. Sometimes those things can be so goddamn awful to ourselves, thinking that if we could just do enough of those bad things to our lives, we might eventually be able to get those people who we are waiting for to say I love you, or they might be able to, you know, correct their wrongs to us. So to coming back to your point, I mean, I did go through a massive experience of learning to hide and put ourselves down in the family system and not put myself too much out there. which did show up quite strongly later on in life, when especially if you are in the coaching consulting world, a big part of that relies on marketing yourself and putting yourself out there. And
yeah, and you went to America and then proceeded to become like a little guru in this little town, right? Can you tell us about that? That must have been a step away from nobody look at me in this family to you had hundreds of people at one stage coming to your meditation circles.
Yeah, it was a very interesting experience, especially because of the fact that I was in Kansas. It's really in the middle of nowhere and nothing much happens there except for tornadoes, which was amazing to watch. But I had kind of my spiritual awakening happened there because there was so much solitude and lonely time and quiet space in Kansas. And that's when I had some major shifts in my relationship with the divine and my journey in my spiritual world. And eventually I started sharing about that message of connecting to your heart, accessing your higher level consciousness, and all of this while I was working in a full-time job. So this was a different phase of life where I'm trying to integrate and align all these different aspects of myself, that how can I be an engineer by profession, so scientific, and then be totally woo on the other hand, you know? So eventually, as we started growing, there was such a deep need for something that resonates with the heart, and what can resonate with the heart more than the divine love. I mean, that's what I believe in, that when there's something that is pure or beautiful, your heart does resonate with that. So as time went by, more and more real, genuine hearts got attracted to the practice. And then at one point, the group kind of grew to 200-300 people in the region, and started having a lot more workshops. So it was a very fun experience.
How old were you when you had 200 or 300 people coming to listen to you?
It was not 200 or 300 at one time, but it was through the group that kind of organically kept expanding. I was probably about 24-ish at that, 23, 24. That time. So that's, it was a very daunting experience in a way. Because you would have, like you may have seen in your interactions, right, that there are people who are so-called spiritual, but the level of ego that exists in that is so high that you can't even share anything that is your truth sometimes. So I had those experiences where they would show up, but with an intention of trying to teach you what it's all about. And sometimes you just have to share your genuine message and go on with that.
Yeah, I think that works at any age in your life for the listeners who are kind of like, okay, cool, but I'm not 24. But so many of us are like, oh, I'm not ready, or people will judge me as not knowing enough or anything like that. Or even, you know, just to say how you feel, sometimes we can feel as though that will be judged. And I think that you just hit the nail on the head by saying, you know, just share your truth, like your divine message in that moment. And that's always going to be the best thing that you can do, regardless of how people respond.
Yeah, absolutely. Spot on.
Cool. All right. So then we are going to get to actually go through this systemic process. I'm really excited about sharing that. But I want to know, so then you were in Kansas and doing this kind of crazy stuff. And you had a lot of financial success as well. And can you tell us about how you then, like, so I guess the part that the reason I want to talk about that is you came from a family of 14 in a one bedroom apartment and you were making a lot of money. And that probably comes from connecting to your heart and listening to that guidance. So I'd love for you to share that just so people understand the transformation, because it's phenomenal. I'm so inspired by you.
Yeah, it's look, I think the money part of it wasn't necessarily my direct attention on making it that way. The money part of it happened as a result of all the hard work and the guiding in the people to their truth and working with individuals in different capacity. So a lot of that change and shift happened as after I moved from Kansas out into San Francisco and started connecting with a lot of entrepreneurial groups there. Where there was so much access to resources and money out there that people at some level had disconnected from their own spirituality. It was more like a fad or a fashion to be considered spiritual, but rather than the actual genuine spiritual wealth, you know, what it makes you, how can you be authentic in an environment that is designed to propagate just your identity around money, you know? And Silicon Valley is absolutely well known for that kind of culture. So that's when I started connecting with a few executives who were really well-to-do. And next thing I know, I'm being referred to some of their friends and some of their social circles in terms of really connecting and knowing what is it about, and, you know, working with the heart and how to grow your relationship with the divine at a deeper level. And more importantly, how to bridge that gap between being totally woo on one side and then still functioning in a high-performance, money-driven world. How to bridge that gap of creativity, authenticity, and still succeed. So that's when a lot of shifts happen. And that's when I got insights into a lot of the executive coaching world, working with entrepreneurs and what is needed for a successful journey in life.
Awesome. You're so awesome. All right. Okay. So can you tell us about this systemic change work stuff? Why would people do that kind of work, and what is it?
Sure. I think there is a model that's prevalent, that's available out there. People should check it out. It's called Logical Levels of Change. Where it's a very simplistic model, but it really works in terms of conveying the work that we're talking about. What it says is that we, all human beings, are always more often than not, we are always looking for a change in our experiences, in our environment, something that we want to wake up and be, you know. Companies, entrepreneurs, whatever be that next level of clients, next level of business success, personal development, there's something tangible we all go for. Now that is considered as an environmental change. Now, for example, I'm here in this call with you and I'm having an amazingly beautiful, great, different experience than what I would normally be doing at this time of my day. So people, when they are working from home versus when they go to a co-working space or a cafe. So that's the lowest level of change that you can actually implement and influence in your life. However, what this model says is that in order to sustain a change, we need to do something at a level, one level above it. And that level of change is called behavioral change. That when we behave differently, we are automatically changing the environment in which we end up.
Okay.
So let's say you start making cold calls as a behavioral aspect. It's very likely that you might end up in a scenario that requires you to do cold calling, which might be a call center, which might be a sales place where there is a lot of cold calling happening, or some company that relies on that as a skill set, right? So what it says is that your behavior immediately affects your environment at a much higher level and in a much quicker way. That how you behave shows up in your environment straight away. Now, the logical question is, what causes our behavior to be influenced? So the level above behavior is called capability. A very good example, which has kind of been proven to be true in many instances, that whenever anyone learns a language that is not their mother tongue or their native language, they end up finding themselves in an environment that supports that language. What I mean by that is, let's say if somebody out here in Melbourne is learning French, that's a capability that they're acquiring. As a result of that capability, their behavior will be that they will be most likely speaking in French.
Yes.
Right? And most likely, those who have acquired that language, they will actually find themselves in an environment that speaks French naturally, which means they would be visiting France more often. Right? Cool. So your capability affects your behavior. Your behavior affects your environment. Right. A classic example is that when somebody has been a personal trainer, when somebody learns the capability of how to manage the body and how to get the nutrition right, how to do, how to make yourself perform at peak performance physically, that capability translates into some form of a behavior where the person is either going into a competitive sports or they are actually frequenting, they are using the machines at the gym a lot more often. And as a result of it, they are finding themselves in an environment that sustains that.
Mm-hmm. Right? Okay.
Does it make sense?
Yes. Yep. Yeah. I'm following so far.
Cool. So, and then again, the logical question is, this is a little bit like Alice in Wonderland, that the rabbit hole goes quite deep. Mm-hmm. So then we start asking the question, what is it that causes us to acquire a certain capability? And that's when we start getting into the realm of our belief systems. Mm. That when we believe in something to be valuable or true or important, we will make that extra effort in actually acquiring the capabilities.
Mm.
If you go to all these personal development seminars, there is a huge emphasis, if you look at the language patterns, there's a huge focus on, if you are here, which means that you are somebody who cares about investing in yourself, which means that you will buy my course.
Yeah.
Usually when they start, when there's an influence of a belief system, you can already see that people who believe that they're going to get something valuable at a personal development seminar, they try and acquire capabilities that are missing in their system. And as a result of it, they find themselves in those workshops that are being offered eventually.
Mm.
Right? So if something is not working in your life, people say, look and investigate, what is the belief system that's getting in the way of you not having the experience of life that you want?
Right? Okay. So you're saying that at a basic level, if you want to change your environment, so you want to change like what house you're living in or something like that, then you can go all the way up to beliefs and change your belief, and then it filters back down to be able to live like, I now live in a much more beautiful home than I used to live in. Like,
exactly. Like my current home where I am, a big part of my belief system is that I want to send my son to the best school that's in the neighborhood. So I'm like, okay, if I believe that to be true, then I'm actually going to look for a house in that zone that the school is based in. Mm. And that's exactly how I ended up in this house.
Mm.
So there's something even deeper than belief, because the belief still is influenced by something even more. It is influenced by our identity, I. Usually identity is nothing but a refined level of belief. Mm-hmm. So anything that has an I am followed by whatever words you use to describe yourself, that is your belief system.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Religious people use an I am, a good, whatever be their religion of choice. Right? Mm-hmm. I'm a good Hindu, I'm a good Christian, I'm a good Muslim, whatever that may be. Right? Leaders, they try and use that, like Donald Trump, for example, classic example, right? I am an amazing businessman. I'm the best businessman. That's a very massive part of somebody's identity structure.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And sometimes those identity structures actually can be quite limiting in so many ways. I find that often when I'm working, I was working with this female executive at a Fortune 500 company. And one of her statements was, because unconsciously, because I am a woman in her family system where she came from, the hierarchy was that the men came first and then the women.
Mm.
So she was struggling with that in her workplace to be able to grow up and go through that glass ceiling. Right? How often you see that play out in life in so many ways, all the negative identity statements that we run in our own system.
Yeah. So you're saying that her identity statement was, I am a woman. And then she had a belief about being a woman that meant that she was lesser than a man. And I say that with those asterisks, right?
Exactly.
Was the belief.
Right. So there was a massive belief structure. And usually belief always seeks validation. Mm. So the moment you go out with that belief, you will find experiences that support that belief, and then it reinforces your belief as a cyclic thing, you know, and like, I said it's true and I believe it. And because it's true, now it's a little bit of a chicken and egg situation there.
Yeah. Do you know, I have a younger brother he's just turned 12 years old. And I told him how I don't believe that I get sick from other people when they have colds. And he was like, oh, that's cool. I'm not going to believe that either. And then he was like, but Rara, he calls me Rara, but Rara, how could I believe that when it's true?
There you go. That's a classic example, right?
Yeah.
Fantastic. So there are a lot of instances where and my coach, who I trained from, based in America, brilliant man, Carl Bukhart is his name. He started working with a lot of executives. And what he found is that so many executives would come to him and they would say, we are running this company and we feel like fraud. We feel like we have no qualifications to be running this multi-billion dollar company and we are still running it. So that fraudulent identity was deeply embedded in there. I am a fraud. I am something who has to hire us. He would work on those changes at a very sophisticated, fine level, but eventually, over time, that identity would still creep in from somewhere.
Mm.
And this is where the biggest breakthrough happened through his work. He started recognizing that what actually creates the identity itself is something known as a system, an ecosystem in which the person is born into. So this is where the whole thing goes absolutely woo-woo. The simple saying that conveys the succinctness of what we are talking about here about identity is that he says, in a family of thieves, the one who doesn't steal feels guilty.
Mm.
So if you are born into a family system with your parents, grandparents, there are unspoken rules that exist in the system.
Mm.
So as human beings, we try to do two things. We try to reach for the goal and we never reach it by creating fictitious obstacles, one thing after the other.
When I get this, I'll be happy. When I have that, I'll be happy. And every time you get there, you just want the next thing and then you'll be happy.
Right, right. It's that or either we never get there.
Oh, okay. But
this is where the family system work becomes very powerful. What happens is that, so imagine this, like there you are and then you have your parents and your grandparents and your great-grandparents, 10 generations. So there's an energy field that resides around all of us. Now that shapes our identity, our thinking, our belief systems, that we are unconsciously tuned into what's going on in the system.
Mm-hmm.
Now imagine as a child, when you're born into a system, if you try and move out of that system as a child, it's absolute ostracization and death for you because you feel like, oh, I am not safe and I don't belong.
Mm.
And whatever stuff is available in your system, that's what you will hang on to as the only truth because that's the only energy that you are tuned into and that's what's running around you.
Mm. And because it's actual death if you were to leave.
Exactly.
In your mind, if you left your parents who are feeding you and like sheltering you.
Exactly.
And even as we, I was talking about this just on the weekend, I'm starting to get really fired up now because even as we become adults in our community, we feel there's like this like deep seated thing that we need to belong to a community.
Right.
In ancient times, if you didn't and you were ostracized from the community, you were so much more likely to die. Like you needed a community to survive.
Absolutely. And that was the biggest punishment back then, that ostracization and exile, that was worse. Because it kind of humiliates you at the deepest level, right? And it kills you and it disconnects you from all the resources that the system was providing to you.
Yeah.
Right? So we as humans look for two things. We look for safety. We look for belonging.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine you are there in a system. Now, there is a big branch of epigenetics which says that how the stress and trauma that happened in previous generations actually gets transferred into your DNA. And absolutely sits in your body.
Mm-hmm.
That is how information gets transmitted from one level to the one generation to the next. Now imagine you as a newborn, your brain is not fully developed. So all you are tuned into is to the energetic soup that's available through your family system.
Mm-hmm.
And I am pretty sure for almost 99% of humanity, the generation before us and the ones before us and the ones much before them, nobody had a massively happy existence. We have all had massive experiences of pain, loss, migration, you know, and usually migration in the olden days was not for a good reason. It was for like for a better life or something that was a struggle.
Mm.
So imagine if all that's available in this soup of your family system is poverty, struggle, pain. You have no recourse but actually to hang on to that as the only way out for yourself.
Mm.
Right. So a classic example is when lottery winners, when they are sitting in a system, when they win a lottery, immediately it puts them completely out of their ecosystem from where they have come from.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
At a deep level, that is death for the child part of them. Because they haven't learned, and this is very powerful as a statement to take in, they haven't learned to survive happiness. We have learned to survive all the negative stuff a lot more. We've got that suffering pat down. We know how to survive all the bad stuff. And where we are as a humanity is we are learning to survive all the good stuff that is having a better life than our ancestors, is having a better experience of life for myself. Is that survivable? Because that's what the critter brain part of us always looks for, threats. Right? So anytime it puts us out of our ecosystem, we will do everything in our power to sabotage that and come back to our ecosystem. That's why lottery winners would go out there, make a ton of money, and actually end up much worse than where they were before.
Mm.
And that is a way of them coming back into their ecosystem where the human part of their brain goes like, oh my God, what the, you know, that's what they proverbially say. They're like, what did I do now? But the child part of them, the critter brain imprinting says, oh wow, whew, this is good because this is what I'm used to. I know this is safe because this is all I've known.
Mm-hmm. Do you know, I went to a Dancing Eros event recently and I felt so powerful. I felt like I connected to the power inside of me that is in the collective feminine consciousness that I didn't even know was there.
Right.
And it was incredible. And I walked out and I was on the phone to my partner and I was telling him how excited I was. And then I started to cry just randomly because I also felt really scared of being that powerful.
Right.
Scared because, you know, what if he couldn't keep up and then I lost the person that I love, you know, like what if the people around me became like scared by it? I feel like so many of us are really excited by success and then scared of success because it means that we may potentially lose the one thing that we want more, which is like love and belonging.
Exactly. This is fantastic because I've been working with someone who's been in Dancing Eros and comes from a very conservative family.
Mm.
And all the overload that's sitting in her system because of cultural, religious, all those views, she finds it hard to reconcile these conflicting parts of herself. That one, at one level, there is this full empowerment of being an amazingly fulfilled human being, exploring sensuality and success and abundance. And on the other hand, reconciling all that with what will my family think if they see me do this?
Mm-hmm.
Right, until that full freedom is available to us, we always will do this back and forth dance of trying to create it and then destroy it, create and destroy it. So that's what we do. Either we never get to what we want, or we end up creating it and then beautifully and elegantly destroying it all. And
please tell us there's another way.
There is, and this is all of this is what we call an unworkable effort to say I love you to our family of origin. Right? This is what belonging in the systemic sense means, that all the awful things we do to ourselves and each other in an unworkable effort to say I love you to our parents or our grandparents or somebody in the system.
Mm.
So the part that we haven't yet learned is to allow ourselves to acknowledge that no amount of suffering that you put yourself through will ever save, rescue, or make life easier or better for the ones who have come before you. And sometimes sitting in the space of appreciating that this is how it is actually a massive acknowledgement, and that is what I was unconsciously doing in my system back in India. That from my own family, nobody has ever left home, and I'm the only one who's gone all the way out, so far out. So to try to reconcile the success while also to have the experience of where they are at with themselves. So this is what systemic change work is about, that how can you change the whole system? Think of it this like an ecosystem, right? That in an ecosystem, when the temperature of something changes, it affects everything that's connected in the ecosystem. Now, if the change is gradual, then the system learns to adapt and change. But if the system is very violent, like a meteor hitting planet Earth, you know, hundreds of thousands of years ago or millions of years ago, whenever that event happened that wiped out all the dinosaurs, That's when an ecological change is too hard, it just destroys it and then it starts to recalibrate itself.
So I've seen this happen with my own family as well. As I've grown more in personal development and spiritual development, I feel as though I've watched myself and so many of my friends and beautiful people who are on this personal growth journey. I've watched us all take this kind of journey with our families. And so we get like really frustrated at them because we feel like we've got all of the answers and that they're living the complete wrong way, right? And then as we start to love ourselves more on that journey, then we've been able to be triggered by them less and to be with them and accept them more for who they are. And it can kind of come to a bit more of an equilibrium. But I do think that this happens, this thing that you're talking about is still happening even once you get to that equilibrium of you're not maybe arguing as much anymore, but there's this underlying thing that says you can't be too different. You need to still stay. You know, I've actually had people I love say, come back down to my level. I can't understand you there. Like, right. Come back down to my level and hang out with me. And they've said those exact words and they don't know what they're saying. That they just mean like, can you just like do what we do or like watch TV with us or whatever it is. But they're actually asking me to come back down to their level. Like they just don't even realize what they're
saying. Right, right. And this is where I have a bit of a gripe with the whole personal development movement and industry in general. It talks a lot about massive action, massive change, massive results, right? But it does not account for the emotional price that you are paying internally in your ecosystem and everybody else that gets impacted through that. If we are talking about real sustainable change, it's as simple as this, right? Like, for example, if this is a clean sheet of card here, now, if I'm folding it right now, and then I'm unfolding it, now, even though the card is still straight, I've already put a crease in it. So the question we need to ask for is, how can we grow and sustain the identity change that we are going through? Because if the shift becomes too far, your system's going to collapse and not let you actually achieve that outcome. It's going to be at the price of breaking a lot of things in your life, including losing partners and stuff like that, right? And that's natural part of the physics of how when the person that chose that partner, the person that chose that life is no longer you. So that person either needs to keep up or grow and be okay with the new ecosystem, right? Or you are okay with the fact of losing all of that.
Yeah.
What I have found over time, when too much of that chaos, it's like many violent changes when they happen in your ecosystem, there is an emotional price that you do end up paying for it. So the proper sustainable ecosystem and spiritual growth, if you're talking about spiritual growth here, it should actually make you more in rapport with parts of yourself that you weren't in rapport with before. Because all of life is about being in greater rapport with yourself, which means and in rapport with other selves. So if you are so-called on a massive spiritual journey as an individual, I feel that it should actually bring more love and compassion to the ones who are not necessarily growing as much as you are, including your own family at first, right? So that you can include them in your compassion and in your growth rather than having to feel so disconnected from them at many levels. I do understand that there's a big community of people who have gone through abusive experiences in their upbringing with their family. But at the same time, it does not prevent you from actually expanding your awareness and your rapport with yourself.
Gosh, this is something that I have spent a lot of time talking about just this weekend, actually. And I didn't know this is where this conversation was going to go. So it's so perfect. Practically though, how do you do that when you go back to spend time with people who still want to treat you like you're a young person who doesn't know what they're talking about, or all they want to do is whinge and complain and you're focusing on bringing more love and joy into your life? I mean, practically, when you're growing and people around you aren't, what do you do about that?
That's a very deep, very interesting question. I think the key here is what emotions are being triggered inside of you. Right? If it's frustration, anger, etc., then it kind of indicates that there are still parts of you that you are not fully in rapport with.
Yeah.
Because if you have really grown, if you have really mastered that emotion, then it doesn't matter, right? I mean, I'm pretty sure that your neighbor 10 houses down the road from you, if they are thinking something negative about you, it doesn't bother you as much, does it?
No.
Because there's emotionally, there's no trigger in that situation with them.
Mm. Mm.
So one of the key practical things you can do is, I call this exercise called appreciating present state.
Mm-hmm.
It is not by excluding that we grow, but it is by including that we really grow. So wherever we are feeling emotionally triggered, there are parts of us that we are not allowing for inclusion as a fullness experience.
Mm-hmm.
Right? A very simple example would be, let's say, the paint that's on your wall behind you. Does it bother you? You just walk in, right? There's no emotional trigger about the color of, maybe for some people it, if it's not green or pink or something, it might be bothering them. But for most people, they don't bother inside. Now, that is what we call an okay, a neutral state.
Yeah.
If for a moment, if you could bring that neutrality to that emotion, for a moment, you can say, okay, this is showing up rather than what it means.
So what you're saying by that is the event or the person that you're with or whatever's happening is neutral until you add in what it means to you.
Exactly. So if you were to step into that energetic experience of saying that, oh my God, WTF, and then okay, then when that experience happens, that actually allows you to first and foremost see that it is happening.
Mm.
And after that, we ask the next question. Now, what would I like?
Mm.
Okay. Because when that trigger happens, a part of our critter brain goes into this fight, flight, freeze kind of a mode. All that part needs to know it's not going to die from this experience physically. It's not going to die. It's survivable.
Yeah.
So the moment you step into that frustration or trigger that our parents or family or uncle is, you know, putting out there, mm-hmm. we step into that space and we say, okay, now what would I like? The moment we do that, it actually allows your brain to take control and start calibrating yourself in a different direction. It's a deeper inner practice of being stepping into that okayness about it. We are not saying okay as in like it's okay. We are not endorsing what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
We are just saying, okay, this is happening.
Yeah. Now what would I like?
Now what would I like? That's a very powerful question. So appreciating present state has many levels to it.
Mm-hmm.
The first and foremost level is actually looking at it and saying, and this is one of a very deep leadership conversation as well, that some of the most powerful leaders that I've come across, they have this innate ability to see both sides of the opposing things while simultaneously holding both those energies in the same space. So it's like it is okay for Kiara to struggle in her business, and it is okay for her to also succeed in her business. And holding both those energies at the same time is when you can actually powerfully expand your ability of personal leadership.
Okay, wait, so that sounds really great, but I don't understand that practically. So how do you hold both of those energies?
Right. So when we, it's a deep energetic exercise that, like, for example, think of a state that is absolutely bothering you right now. Okay, just load that up.
What do you mean? Like something that's frustrated me lately?
Or whatever, yeah. Or something that is of an issue in your life or something that you are bothering me.
Okay.
Okay. Where do you feel it in your body?
In my tummy.
In your tummy. Okay, great. While keeping that in your tummy,
mm-hmm.
also load up what's an experience that you would like.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Where do you feel that?
In my heart.
In your heart. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, can you look at both of these simultaneously?
Yeah.
Just feel both of those simultaneously and say, it is okay for both of these to exist right now.
It is okay.
So just okay that both of these are existing right now. Now, the you who has chosen these is actually about both of these experiences. Because you are able to feel the struggle part. You are able to also feel the part that is nice that you like. But you are still above both of these.
Mm.
So this is where you're truly connecting to your real high level consciousness beyond these two experiences that you want or don't want.
Okay, so it makes them seem less important, I guess. Like it, we take it out of our identity and we make it just a part of our experience rather than a part of who we are as we do that.
Well said, perfectly said that. Because now you are at a meta level. You are at a level beyond what has, you are stepping into the creational authority that you have over these experiences.
Mm-hmm.
When we are in that frustration thing, we feel subjugated to that experience. We feel like, oh, something's taken over. I can't control. But now when you experience your states this way, you can see, wow, I am the creator of these both sides of the coin.
Mm.
And in that moment is when you really find deep, authentic freedom.
Mm. Yeah, I like that. It's like saying, one of my mentors recently had an article published where she got a tattoo saying, what if there was no problem? And I feel like it's kind of similar. It's like when you're with someone and you're being triggered or you feel like you're being called back to a system that's holding you back. What if there was no problem? What if you're saying like, what if both could exist at the same time and you could recognize you are above, like your consciousness is actually above both of those options anyway.
Exactly. It's just that we are feeding those consciousnesses through us. So that's when we are appreciating the actual reality of what is available to us right now. And now from this state, if you ask yourself, now what would I like?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that loads up a very open, like I can feel it. It's a very open-hearted experience that's loading up for you right now. It's like it's much bigger than what you were feeling even before.
Yeah.
So
that's cool.
Yeah. So this is how we do systemic change, but this is appreciating present state.
Mm-hmm.
First and foremost, by knowing that no amount of you struggling or suffering is ever going to make it better for your parents or grandparents or great grandparents. No amount of, yeah. You don't need to do anything more to be loved more.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to do anything more to belong more.
Yeah.
Right? You will always belong and you are always loved. It's the expression of that can be pretty messed up in families. But the underlying conduit of fiber that connects one generation to the other is that of love. Just that we experience a distorted version of our parents or grandparents in our interactions.
And I wonder, I know we're close to having to finish up, even though
sure.
I'm so excited and I feel like I could talk to you for ages. I wonder if a part of my ability to release that need to belong. So in my family, I think there's still stuff I'm releasing and I don't know when you get to the point where you're like, tick, done. But I feel like a part of what I've been able to release and how I've been able to step into a version of me and be okay with however people see that is it because maybe now I believe I am the divine. I believe I am connected to all that is. And so that's like a new system. Like I cannot ever not belong to the divine. So there is nothing that I can do that could cut me off from being loved and belonging. So it feels like, you know, my parents, my family, I love them and I will always love them, yet they're not all of my family. Like my family is the divine. I am the divine. All is within as it is without. Like it's just, does that make sense? Am I sounding really woo-woo now?
Well, no, I think you're in good company here. So I think the thing that gets most overlooked is that you got to acknowledge the fact that the flow of life into you happened through your ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Eventually, as I said, all of life is about being in greater rapport with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So when you start acknowledging your divinity, you're also acknowledging their divinity because they are the ones who's through whom life flowed.
Yeah.
This is so when we all of family system work is actually about finding your rightful position in your family. The ones who came before you have seniority over you. The ones who came before them have seniority about them. It's only when we try to act bigger than the generation before us is when we get entangled in their problems that we are not qualified to solve for them.
Mm-hmm. So are you saying we should act smaller than the generation before us?
I wouldn't say the expression of your life should be smaller, but mm-hmm. internally the respect that your life always came through, a parent will always be a parent, a child will always be a child. So acknowledging, and you know, that's why in Eastern cultures there is this huge, which was found out through this family systems work and family constellation work is what I do as well out here.
Mm-hmm.
There is a big need for respecting your elders.
Mm-hmm.
It's because when you kind of bow down to them, you are actually acknowledging that the flow of life came through to them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you are in a way kind of leaning against the wisdom and the protection and everything that that generation is providing to you for your well-being.
And so how I'm hearing that is because I have a bit of a, I respect and love all people, but there's like a bit of me that feels as though people deserve, like people need to earn some of that as well. You know, like human respect. Like if you want me to listen to your opinions, then you should listen to mine as well. That sort of thing.
This is a lot deeper than that actually.
Yeah. But what I'm hearing in that is to respect like when you see the divinity in your parents and that you were birthed through them, then you can see the divinity in yourself as well. It's like a reverence to the fact that they were the ones that you came through to get here.
Exactly. And the flow of life eventually traces back all the way to the divine anyway.
Mm.
So all you are acknowledging is the fact that your gift of life has come through from two human beings, and then it came through from someone else. And when we trace back all the way, it ends up way back to the divine source anyway.
Mm.
Right? Mm. Oftentimes people struggle with acknowledging because of the nature in which these humans have interacted or how they have expressed themselves in the relationship to the child and all the bad stuff that does happen. But at the end of it, deep down as a spirit, that acknowledgement of that my life has come through willingly or unwillingly through these channels of human conduits.
Mm.
And we are just acknowledging it. We are not saying it's good or bad. When we start acknowledging it, it opens the flow into you a lot better.
Mm. Do you know, I find as I revere and worship and honor more people around me, that what I'm really doing is doing the same for myself, honoring myself as I honor everyone else. And sometimes I'm getting these beautiful flow moments and I just want to walk around and like bow to everybody. I feel like everybody is a queen or a king, like that everyone is divine in their own beautiful, unique expression of that. And that when we honor others, that we can honor ourselves through that.
And that's a beautiful quality of your heart where you are, when you align more with your truth, there's no way that you cannot not see that in others.
Mm. Oh, this has been so powerful. I wish we could talk forever. Oh my gosh. How do people come and find you and say, can you please help me figure out what these old patterns are so I can keep growing?
Sure. They can visit my website, connect with me on Facebook.
What's your website URL?
It's mihirthakar.com.au. It's mihirthakar.com.au.
Perfect. And they can find you on Facebook and add you.
Yeah, I'd love to connect with people there and always willing to chat. So
awesome. He is so willing to chat. He's a beautiful soul. I'm sure everyone who's listening can agree. And so wise. Thank you for sharing.
Pleasure. Thank you for being inviting me and giving me this opportunity to share. So pleasure to be here.
It's beautiful. I love every time I do a podcast. It correlates with what's been happening in my life and what I've been learning in my life for that week up until that. It's incredible. So awesome. I am very, very honored that you came to join us. And to all of the listeners, if you've enjoyed this podcast, please head on over to iTunes and review it so that other people can see what incredible guests we have and what they're sharing on here, and more people can continue to receive this incredible inspiration and empowerment. Like, these people charge a lot of money to be sharing what they're sharing, and we get to have them here for free. It's incredible. So please review on iTunes and share this out to your community as well, so that more people can be inspired and touched by the messages that beautiful people like me here are sharing on the An Inspired Life podcast. And I would love to know if this has hit any aha moments for you, because it's had a few for me. So if you can head on over to An Inspired Life on Facebook and find this podcast and join the discussion so we can talk about where has this shown up in your life? What did you get to realize through this that you may not have seen before? I would really love to connect with you and hear your stories and hear what you've learned. Mihir, thank you so much. And to the listeners, I will see you next week.
Thanks, Kara.
Bye-bye.
Bye.